From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a dramatic video taken at the Kabul airport on Monday. In the footage, a crowd of Afghan citizens are running after a U.S. Air Force plane, some clinging to it as it taxis for takeoff. This came just a day after the Taliban, of course, took over. It's been a disaster there. At least two people were seen falling to their death as the plane ascended over Kabul. Reports show seven people were killed during the incident. That chaos led to U.S. military officials temporarily suspending evacuations of both military personnel and citizens so the airfield could be cleared. Afghans living in Rochester have been watching these scenes, many of them with family members trapped in Afghanistan. They have been waiting for months, if not years, to get out of the country. The local organization Keeping Our Promise has been working around the clock to try to help them. It supports Afghans who served the U.S. military as interpreters and who have applied for special immigrant visas to come to the United States. I'll quote now from Vox. So far, the U.S. has only evacuated about 2,000 Afghan allies and their families, a fraction of the 88,000 who are estimated to have applied for U.S. visas, not to mention the many thousands more who are not eligible for visas but who could apply for refugee status in another country if they could somehow make their way there. Those allies left behind now face retribution from the Taliban, who have been accused of dozens of revenge killings in recent months. End quote. Keeping Our Promise executive director Ellen Smith says she has no words to describe this madness, but this hour we are going to ask her to try. She is working with hundreds of families who are stranded in province cities. She joins us this hour along with two Afghans living in Rochester on special immigrant visas. I'd like to welcome our guest now, Ellen Smith, executive director of Keeping Our Promise. I don't even know where to start.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so sorry about what everything. I mean, I know it has to be the hardest week of your life, but thank you for being with us, Ellen. Thank you.
Thanks.
Also with us, using a pseudonym, Najiba is an Afghan native who came to the United States on a special immigrant visa. She joins us now. Najiba, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Waleed is an Afghanistan native who came to the United States on a special immigrant visa after serving the U.S. military as an interpreter. Waleed, welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, and thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Ellen, let me just start with you and sort of take the snapshot of what we know. You know, over the years on this program, you've been on many times. We have been proud to have you, proud to meet people like Waleed and Najiba and so many more. We have, frankly, been telling these stories, and you've been telling these stories to an audience that, you know, I think has paid attention to Afghanistan on and off. And I know that you've felt the urgency that maybe the American public hasn't. And all of a sudden in the last week, everyone wants to know what you are doing and what the stories are, and everything has changed. What is the situation on the ground as you understand it, and what is that work like right now?
So let's just start about 6 weeks ago when we started seeing each province in Afghanistan falling to the Taliban. And actually it started before then as the U.S. started withdrawing troops and closed Bagram Air Force Base. I think that was really the indicator and how things went downhill so quickly. But we have many families stranded in the provinces, and they can't get out. The airports have been taken over by the Taliban. The roads are controlled by the Taliban. Families are reporting. I have videos from one of our families where the Taliban has firebombed their house, destroyed everything. They went back inside. Their lives were spared, but everything they owned was destroyed. And he has a picture of his children just walking through this blackened wreckage with all their teacups smashed and dishes smashed and just absolutely nothing left for them. And we have another Afghan family here. The Taliban went in Kunduz into their home, ordered out the wife and the brothers and sisters, but kept the husband, the father. And we don't know if he's dead or alive. We don't know if he's a Taliban prisoner. We don't know if he's been tortured. I mean, all of our families just keep sharing these stories over and over again. And the stress for our families is just unbelievable. They are reliving nightmares. I'm not even sure that they're reliving. A lot of them grew up under the Taliban. They grew up fighting this kind of horror, but no one has ever seen something exactly like this, what's going on now.
How many months leading up to the last week, for how many months have you feared that this is what could happen?
Ever since President Trump announced that he was negotiating with the Taliban, I obviously I've never had direct contact with the Taliban, but just from the stories that families tell us over and over again, I don't think that as a group they can be trusted. They have their militias that are going to do their own thing. And I saw it going south from then. How could we pull out? We released 5,000 Taliban prisoners. What did we think was going to happen when they were released? They have said over and over again that the United States and those who supported the United States are infidels. There was a report just weeks ago on how the Taliban are taking over these smaller cities, and they are requiring families to register their young daughters, their 15-year-old daughters, and register widows under the age of 45 years old for marriage to Taliban fighters. I mean, the horrors that these families are going through are clear as day, and they're out there in the press. And I just want people to listen and understand what our families have been fighting against all these years.
Now, you mentioned when the Trump administration was negotiating with the Taliban. Yesterday, Nikki Haley, the former UN ambassador, said that negotiating with the Taliban is like trying to make a deal with the devil. In 2018, she boasted that she was nearing peace agreements with the Taliban while she and others in the Trump administration were indeed negotiating with them. I have no idea why she thinks that 3 years later we've forgotten her words. But do you think it was a fool's errand from the beginning, Ella? I mean, was there any opening to a peace deal here?
No. No, I don't. When you have people who are perfectly willing to do mass slaughters of civilians, I don't know how you make peace with someone like that. There has to be a wholesale change. I don't know how you make peace with someone who wants to kill you.
Talking to Ellen Smith, Executive Director of Keeping Our Promise. So let's just talk about how many people you're trying to help. What's the overall picture of how many SIVs? We've seen different numbers trying to estimate how many people are in need right now. What numbers do you have, Ellen? And in particular, how many people have you been working with that, you know, you're sort of aware of, at least aware of their current situation, in, whether it's in Kabul or otherwise in Afghanistan?
Right. I mean, right now, I have just had to put off many, many messages for help, because the bottom line is we can only focus on one family and one petition at a time. Okay. The system that's in place right now is if there is an SIV applicant and they have started the process, there is a form that we can fill out with the United States State Department for evacuation of these people. And we follow that form with a memorandum to Congressman Morelli's office that basically tags these folks for evacuation. Every single family we have helped has gotten an evacuation notice. The problem is they can't get to the airport, or if they get to the airport, some of our families have already been injured. We have one SIV with a broken arm. We have another man who his son was injured, and he's been injured, and they've had to, the guy with the broken arm is now in Qatar, but the man and son and family, they had to go back to a safe location. And you'll hear other stories that are similar to this all the time.
What we also know, Ellen, as you say, the injuries that people are sustaining, what we know is that on the road to the airport, the Taliban and Taliban fighters have controlled parts of those roads. CNN's Clarissa Ward has done a lot of reporting this week on that. And just the video that she posted a couple days ago, walking one of the roads on the way to the airport, a Taliban fighter has what looks like a whip of sorts and is just attacking people who are in line in these long lines. And of course, the concern is that it could be worse. You hear sporadic gunfire here and there. Now, the Taliban representatives are telling organized media that, well, it's not their people doing that. They've told their people, don't do that. And there's no real credibility with that, unfortunately. But I guess I'm wondering how much time you think there is to even try. What is the time horizon as you see it for trying to get people to that airfield out to safety? Did we lose Ellen? We lost Ellen for one second.
Yes, I'm back.
Oh, there you are. Okay.
I'm back.
So, Ellen, how much time do you think people who are, whether it's SIVs or others who need to get to that airport, how much time do you think they have here? Are we talking days? The Biden administration had talked about a September sort of deadline, whether it's 9/11 or 9/1 or whatever the case is. What are we assuming about how much time there is to even try to get people out?
I mean, right now, the assumption is 10 days. They've said that they want everything pulled out by the end of August. It's the 20th. President Biden is going to be on with a 1 o'clock press briefing. We have no idea what's going to be said. I haven't a clue, but I know that we need to get these families out now, and there's just simply not enough air power to get everybody out that needs to get out. I mean, that's just a fact.
The Biden administration has said that, and the president said this week, that there would have been no way to conduct this operation without some chaos. He has also admitted that the collapse happened faster than anyone in his administration had predicted, that U.S. intelligence was woefully wrong about what would happen. Can I ask how much anger or disappointment you're harboring right now, Ellen? I mean, I know this president and the previous president agreed that getting out of Afghanistan was the right thing. Donald Trump a month ago said this was all his idea. He wanted the credit for it. The Vice President Kamala Harris has made it clear that she wanted some credit for helping sway the decision. Everyone sort of in power-making circles in the last couple of administrations agreed that we should do this. How much anger are you harboring right now over the execution of it? Was there a different way to do it?
I'm furious. I'm absolutely furious. And you know, I am not there on the ground to second guess, right? I'm not the military. I'm not the president. There's certainly intelligence information that, you know, a boots on the ground person like me doesn't have. But it was just beyond me why we couldn't have used Bagram Air Force Base as a safe haven for these SIV families. I'm not sure how many soldiers and people we had there in its heyday, 125,000, 100,000. I could never understand why we couldn't have used the resources that we had built up to make sure that people got out. Before we closed the base in Kandahar, why didn't we make sure that we could get the families out, or at least to Kabul or to Bagram, before we just closed up shop? And instead, we just left them hanging. And that's how I view it, that we left them hanging.
Do you also think that there is not credibility when the Biden administration says, look, if we had sped up the evacuation elsewhere, if we had brought more people to the airport, it would have been a signal that there was no chance for the Afghan government to keep the country, that there was no chance to withstand the Taliban, and that they did not want to signal to the Taliban that it was inevitable that that there was sort of a capitulation?
Well, don't you think as the Taliban were taking over the provinces the last 12 weeks that there was some sort of signal there?
Yeah.
I mean, that's just disingenuous.
Yeah, if you can elaborate on that point, Ellen, because this is, again, something that for those who haven't studied Afghanistan closely may not realize. By the time the dominoes were falling rapidly, the Taliban had already assumed and taken quite a lot of control in southern provinces. I mean, it's not like it was all just one weekend. There was enough of a signal of what was happening for weeks starting into the spring, well into the summer. Isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct. What they started doing was taking over, you know, there are very few roads leading into and out of the provincial, the capitals of the provinces. So they started taking over the roads to the capital. So they weren't necessarily in the capital, but they controlled the roads to and from these capitals. And then the next thing I start hearing from our families here in Rochester is that their families are reporting that the farmers can't get their goods to market, that there were starting to be food shortages, that the Taliban weren't letting people in or out. And then the next thing you know, the Taliban is controlling the border. And I was trying to work on getting a family out through Miles for Migrants. And we knew we needed to get them out quickly. And she couldn't get, she and her family could not get to Kabul. And he said, well, how about she crosses the border into Pakistan and we can get her out through Islamabad. Well, the problem was the Taliban was controlling the border there and there was no way to get into Pakistan and there was no way to get into Tajikistan. So people just, they couldn't flee. You know, if you didn't get out 3 months ago, it was highly unlikely that you were going to get out once the Taliban started controlling the borders. And if that's not a clear signal of what was happening, I don't know what more of a signal or hint you may have needed.
Let me ask Waleed, who is an Afghanistan native who came to the United States on a special immigrant visa after serving the U.S. military as an interpreter. Waleed, remind us, when did you come to the United States?
I just arrived here about 2.5 months ago. Yeah.
And can you describe what you understand to be the situation in Afghanistan? I'm sure you have friends and family you are concerned about. What is happening?
Actually, my family is over there in Kabul, and we have sold the farm for evacuation, and they are just went to Kabul airport to get there. And the situation is worse over there. There is too much crowd near the Kabul airport. I mean, Hamid Karzai International Airport. So they tried two times, but there is not possibility to just go inside because there are thousands of people. They are just waiting, and the front line is Taliban over there. They just sometimes use gunfires and also air fires. And also I hear that it has been used tear gas as well. So the situation is in that very, 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 very bad over there, like a nightmare. My family went over there two times, but they were not able. And right now, my mom and my young child, she's 7 years old. They are sick in home. So, yeah, the situation is, you know, it is. I'm speechless to describe what's going on over there right now.
The Taliban has said, Waleed, that they are not going to go door to door. They are not going to engage in retribution attacks, that people can go back to serving and working the same way that they did, that they want a peaceful transition. Do you believe any of that?
Yes, they have announced officially this. And previously also they have raised this issue, but Taliban are not trustable people and trustable groups. Many times they think something, and they do, their action is absolutely different what they are saying and what they are announcing. So we have many reasons, many elements that shows that Taliban actions and speech is not the same. So absolutely, I do not trust on them. Yeah.
Do you have any reports, Waleed, that the Taliban has already engaged in violence? Is that happening already, or is that not yet happened?
Yes. As I'm following the news in Afghanistan through the social media and some media that I have availability, there's lots of elements that Taliban use violence against those people who fight against them previously. And also they have already started door-to-door searching, that it has been broadcasted through the social media as well.
Waleed, how consistently are you able to communicate with your family and friends who are still in Afghanistan?
Actually, the power situation is not good over there, and also the internet is not good over there, and also there is lack of credit cards to just recharge their phones, so it's not very, very smooth, my communication with my family. Yes, I still have contact with them, but it is not so smooth.
So what is the plan as you understand it right now for your family who is there? I mean, you mentioned, Waleed, that there are thousands of people just trying to get to the airport. What are they going to try to do?
The ground shows that if the situation is continue like this for my family, I mean, my old mom and my young wife and three small children, it's not possible to go to the Kabul airport according the evidence and according the situation that over there is continuing. So our option is to just stay at home and seek an alternative option. But the current situation is absolutely not possible for women, for children to go inside. It has been announced for thousands of people at the same time to come to Kabul airport. So management is not absolutely good over there. So I think the best, and there is also possibility of some suicide attack over there, as I hear that because Taliban has lots of enemies as well as ISIS is one of their enemies. Taliban is trying to show that they have the power to secure the areas, but probably some enemy of Taliban tried to do some suicide attack over there. So the risk is too high near to the Kabul airport. So that's why our option is to just stay home and wait until another safe alternative.
At 1 o'clock this afternoon, coming up in just more than half an hour, President Joe Biden will make remarks about Afghanistan, we presume. We don't know that he'll take questions, but we will have whatever he brings to us in full for you at 1 o'clock right here on public radio. And can I ask you, Waleed, what do you hope to hear from President Biden today?
Better management of over there. You know, America is trying to just evacuate the SIVs and family who have worked the U.S. military, and they're trying the best. But the management over there and the facilities that over there is available is not enough. So we just want better management, better facilities, and also a longer time to just accomplish this mission over there. I think a negotiation with Taliban face-to-face and make more time and space for this project, and also better management and facilities will be the best way to just accomplish this mission over there.
Do you expect, Waleed, that your family will eventually get out on a plane? Do you think it will happen?
Actually, I am hopeless right now. According to the evidence and what I hear from them, actually, I am hopeless. I just pray for them that probably a miracle happen and it happens. But if we think practically, I think it is so difficult. Because I want to add one more point that there is thousands of people without any documents. You know, they have not worked with the U.S. Army, but they have heard that America has evacuated these people. So they also come to the Kabul airport. So that makes the situation worse. That because half of these people who are over there, they don't have any documents. They have not worked with the U.S. Army. Just because of the situation, they are trying to just go out from Kabul city. They are trying to use this platform.
Talking to Waleed and Najiba, who are Afghan natives, came to the United States on special immigrant visas, and they are watching the plight of their friends and family in Afghanistan who are desperate to get out now. Ellen Smith is with us, executive director of the organization called Keeping Our Promise. And Ellen and her organization have been doing this work for years, not just the last week or month or year. They've been working on this for years, and this is the nightmare scenario that she feared for so long. Ellen, can I ask you to share some thoughts about one photograph in particular? It was the photograph inside the military transport aircraft with more than 600 people packed in, departed on, I think, on Sunday night. And that photograph, I guess what I found so disheartening was that photograph shows the faces of people who were desperate to leave, and at least they're on an aircraft. They're getting out. The response to that was there was a lot of love and outpouring of support, but there were leaders in this country, media members to Republican lawmakers, from Tucker Carlson to J.D. Vance and many others, who said that they don't want to see planes like that show up here, that we haven't vetted the people who are desperate to get out of Afghanistan, that we would need more time to vet them, and that this is not a time to bring a lot of people from Afghanistan here. And I'm, you know, that sentiment is more popular than people want to realize, particularly on the political right. And I would like to hear what you think about that, Ellen.
So I do believe the backstory to that photograph is that the crowds on the airfield had, in fact, sort of invaded that plane, and they were unprepared for that. And it is true that there were probably people on that plane who did not have documents. I will say that the process right now for getting an evacuation notice is this, that I have SIV applicants that we have worked with, or we have family members here in Rochester whose brothers or sisters or uncles or aunts have worked for the U.S. military or the State Department or USAID or the Army Corps of Engineers, or they've been contractors. I've got one soldier who I've been working with who was friends with an applicant who worked in the food commissary at Bagram, and then he was transferred over to the commissary at the embassy where they got food. And we have letters of recommendation for these people. The problem lies in that some of them, it's true, could not get HR letters. Every applicant has to have a human resource letter. But what are you going to do when it was a contractor at Bagram, and Bagram was downsizing years ago? This didn't happen overnight. And that contractor just went away, and they don't respond. And we have many contractors who just don't respond when these people are desperate. But we have U.S. soldiers and people who work for USAID directly or the Army Corps, and they're responding. And they say, and they will tell you, I worked with this person. I trust this person. I trusted this person with my life. But that is not the HR letter that the government wants. So we do have vetting, and it's extreme vetting. And in my opinion, we're not letting people in that we should let in. When I have several soldiers or people who worked for their government telling me, I trusted this person with my life and you can trust them and they will make a good U.S. citizen. And we've got employment badges. The other thing that you also need to realize is every single one of these people who came in and out of bases and facilities, there's bio data on them. There's iris scans on them. We can do this. There can be a vetting. So the plan right now is we have people in Qatar. Guam has said that they will take, that they're willing to take like 100,000 people. There's a way to do this and properly vet them before they get on U.S. soil. And then there are others who have been through what we call COM approval, chief of mission approval. They've been through their interviews, and they're just literally waiting. And those are the folks that we're able to help right now to get here. Those who have only gone through the first step, which is called chief of mission approval, they are in Qatar. And those who have had their interviews and it looks like their paperwork is cleared, they're the ones that have gotten to Fort Lee.
Before I talk to Najiba, one more question for Waleed. Waleed, I've read in various places that the support inside Afghanistan for the Taliban is very low. Something like 13% of the population wants to see the Taliban back in power. But for Americans who are trying to understand then, well, why did the army that we spent 20 years trying ostensibly to train and prepare, why did they give up, and why was it so easy for the Taliban? What hits me first is the story that President Ghani not only left in the middle of the night, but also apparently left with a bag of cash with millions and millions of dollars in it. And I wonder if there was ever trust in the leadership, or if there was a, you know, maybe a feeling that no one was out for the best interest of the people. I don't know. Do you have a sense, Waleed, for why it was so easy for the Taliban, why the Afghan army gave up, why they were able to take control of Kabul without a fight, and why this has happened the way it has?
Our previous president, Ghani, told that it was a defeat for politicians, not for Afghan National Army. So the interpretation of this point, that means that there was some political game over there, because our army was well equipped and they had that capacity to fight with Taliban for years, but it was a politically defeated, not a military defeated. So my point of view is, even some sources say that Ghani administration has some sort of relation with Taliban and just let them to come and take over the Afghanistan overall. So some sources say like that, yeah.
Hmm. Najiba is an Afghanistan native who came to the United States on a special immigrant visa. When, Najiba, when did that happen?
Thank you. I have come to U.S. on 2019 on my special immigration visa.
And what is your, sort of, can you tell us what's happening in Afghanistan in regards to your friends and family who are still there? What are your concerns?
Actually, as I have worked with a large group of women back in Afghanistan, and I'm in close contact with women, let me talk in the from their point of view. The biggest issue nowadays, I know every family is facing issues in Afghanistan, but mostly affected groups of people are women, especially the single women who got their COM approval, who had paper and documents on hand, but they cannot get to the airport. Same the male with their wife and their kids, because they cannot handle how to go through this crowded lines and access to the gate and show their documents and get to the airport. And this is the biggest concern with everyone. Even a huge number of single ladies, they are not willing to leave their houses because they know that they cannot access, because they have tried multiple times, but they didn't become able to do so. So now when I'm talking with them, they say that if the situation remains like this, we won't be able to even get out of the home to the airport.
What do you think, Najiba, is likely to happen this time around with the Taliban leading in charge? What do you think is going to happen with the rights of women? The Taliban are saying that women can continue to work, that women don't have to, don't have to be accompanied by men when they leave the house, as they did 25 years ago when the Taliban was in power. The Taliban are now saying that women can continue in school. And the answer they seem to keep giving, Najiba, is that women can continue to do what they want to do as long as it fits under Sharia law. So what does that mean? What do you think will happen?
The clear-cut answer from women's side will be no trust on what Taliban say, especially regarding women work, women rights, or women work, or women empowerment. Believe me, all the women provide one answer, that they are gonna to just target the role models who worked for 20 years, who served. They're just gonna to target them, and they will do something with them to keep as a lesson to other young generation, and tell them that if you trust animation, or if you trust on women empowerment, or if you try to work, that will be the result that you will face with. So believe me, the first affected generation will be those who work as a role model in past 20 years.
What about school? I mean, is there any hope for young girls and schooling and opportunity under the Taliban at all?
Not at all. Because if the Taliban are looking, as Ellen mentioned, that they are sending letters or announcing that they are looking for young ladies to get married with, or they are searching for the widows under 45, whatever they are planning or whatever they are saying regarding them. So in this situation, how the families were trust, how the young ladies were trust to go to the school and sit, like, and it's like giving marriage to the Taliban that we are already here, or who we are, or which house or which family has young ladies to get target.
Najiba, when you
and I'm sorry, but look, it was just May 16th of this year that the Taliban attacked a girls' school and killed 90 people. May 16th, 2021. It was in Takhar that they burned a school and all the books. Okay, they cut 7 days ago. They went into a school district in Nangarhar and they cut the throats of three school teachers.
They haven't changed.
They did many and multiple things to the girls' school in past 20 years. Even these schools were under the government coverage. So how we can trust these people that they are changed and they will just leave them and they will change their policy against the girls' education? No way. No way at all.
Yeah. I mean, Najiba, I saw a video the other day of a small group, maybe a dozen or two dozen women protesting on the streets of Kabul, holding signs and protesting. And, you know, the Taliban fighters were sort of watching them, but were restrained. And all I could think of was they are restrained for now because they know the world is watching. This is not going to be safe in the future. This is not an indication that there has been change. This is not an organization or a religious group, the Taliban, who are truly reformed. They know the world is watching, and I think we should be very careful to trust that they are any different than they were before. And so what do you want the world to do for the women and girls of Afghanistan, Najiba? What happens next?
The eye for worldwide was the media. While we have no media on board, like media is not providing the correct reports, even because they're scared from the current procedures of Taliban. So how the world will watch the reality of what's going on over there? So if we look to that small group of people who come out to the social media, let's wait and see the result that Taliban will give it, or the punishment that Taliban will give it to them. I'm sure that they will do something against these ladies, but because they are looking, the Taliban know that international people are looking to them. That's why they are a little bit quiet, but they are doing their work while nobody understands. They will not accept the blame for that. If any of these young ladies get killed, they will say, no, we didn't get that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. Najiba's point is very important. When the Taliban has been interviewed, Steve Inskeep of NPR said to one of their spokespeople, we already have reports of retribution killings. And the Taliban says, well, that's not our people. That must be somebody who went off on their own. Well, that's a very convenient excuse. And that's what we're going to continue to hear, unfortunately. Finally, Najiba, can you give me a sense for what life has been like for you in the United States? And have you felt welcome in the United States?
Yeah, the same scenario happened in the airport crowded lines. People started checking people's documents that who are working for the U.S. people, but Taliban said they were not our people. The biggest concerning that things will happen, but nobody will get blamed for that.
I'm talking to Najiba and talking to Waleed, two Afghanistan natives, came to the United States on special immigrant visas. And Ellen Smith is the executive director of Keeping Our Promise. Ellen, can you answer a question from a listener who is asking, let me pull up this email. Oh, boy. One was asking, what can be done to help? What can we in the United States do to either help Ellen's organization or the people of Afghanistan right now? How do you answer that, Ellen? Do we have
right
Ellen?
Now.
Yeah, there you are. Yep.
No, you've got me. I'm sorry.
I know you're probably multitasking. There's a lot going on. I know.
No. It's so right now, we're working on, of course, emergency petitions for evacuation. As a collective, I really want politicians and our president to hear that the situation at the Kabul airport is unacceptable, that the fact that there are still Americans in provinces who couldn't get out, and the fact that there are SIV applicants or those SIVs who had visas who can't get out is unacceptable. And the politicians and the president need to hear the Americans who support the Afghan people who need to get out. And you know, I can't stress that enough, that this is just not an acceptable situation.
Is it any means necessary to get them out?
You know, so if I was dictator, I mean, the only way I can see to get people out is to retake airports and to try to get them out of these airports in the provinces, because I don't know how else they're going to get out. And so you're negotiating with the Taliban, then fine, negotiate with them in Kandahar, negotiate with them in Kunduz, and let the people leave. I mean, let the people leave who want to leave. I don't know what else to say, and give them safe passage somewhere, but it's got to happen. What can be done locally? So right now, all the families are coming in through the refugee program at Catholic Family Center, because the only way they're able to get out is on these military flights. What we have done in the past is relied on Miles for Migrants to help families get out. So as soon as they got their visas in the past, we could just file an application with Miles for Migrants and get them tickets to get to Rochester. Because there's no commercial flights, we can't get the families out right now. What we are doing is we are still offering to help pay their first rent and their security. We're still helping with their first food. Both us and Catholic Family Center have a lot of work going on to get these families resettled, and they're coming in earlier this week. It was practically daily. I know when families, right now, we don't seem to have as many families in Fort Lee in Virginia, but we do have families that are in Qatar, and I just don't know when they're going to get here. We just had a veterans outreach program, veteran services from Monroe Community College reach out to us, and just because things are going so crazy right now with incoming people, they're talking about helping us just with the donation program, like picking up donations and helping get these donations to our new families' homes. And that's going to be a tremendous help. We just need some goods and services that aren't necessarily provided. Like we try to give each family a fan for every bedroom in their living room. You know, there's just simple things that we need to buy all the time on our Facebook page. On our website, there's an Amazon wish list, just of items that families need. And unlike the families in the past, these families who are allowed to bring two suitcases, these new families may bring nothing. They're stuck right now. I mean, one family, my understanding is they've been in Kabul airport for 4 days. It's not like there's food service. It's not like there's help for them. And these families are coming in exhausted, emotionally exhausted. One of the things our organization does is we offer each new family a caring circle of volunteers. So if there's a group of friends who are used to communicating with each other and working with each other, they can volunteer together and help become a caring circle and just get families to their first appointments when they're here. Teach them to use the bus. Just be there as emotional support right now, because we cannot imagine the hell that these families have just been through.
Let me read an email from Martha in Fairport for Ellen. And as I do that, let me also just mention, got an email from a listener who was saying, you know, noting that I was pointing out Nikki Haley's hypocrisy regarding negotiating with the Taliban. She's saying this week, well, that's like dealing with the devil. Why would you do that? Well, she was boasting about doing exactly that 3 years ago when she was UN ambassador. I'm only pointing out the hypocrisy. I'm not putting a value judgment on negotiating with anyone. And as people smarter than me have said this week, you know, you often don't negotiate with your allies. You negotiate with enemies because you're trying to find some sort of solution. I'm not saying you negotiate with everybody. I'm just pointing out that the Trump administration absolutely cut a deal with the Taliban. Whether it was a good deal or not, people will have to evaluate. But Martha says, Ellen's work is admirable. For wars to come to a conclusion, there must be a negotiated settlement and or a decisive military victory. In either case, there will be a tragic loss of life and destruction. Ellen stated that in lieu of the U.S. negotiating with the Taliban, there needed to be wholesale change. How should that wholesale change have been accomplished? Would continued warfare using U.S. and other allied troops and material have been acceptable to Ellen, and for how long? That's from Martha in Fairport.
So, yeah, and I love to address this. One of the things that Joe Biden has said and others have said is that we were not there for nation building. But, you know, after World War II, we had a Marshall Plan, right? And it was a long-term commitment. And as part of that Marshall Plan, in case anyone's forgotten, we still have military bases in Europe. Okay? I'm not saying that's the way to go. But I am saying this, that there are certain things we did in Afghanistan without a clear plan, simply because nobody did want to commit to be there, to being there long-term. And that was something that was always cognizant in my head as I watch this over the years, is, you know, oh, we're just going to go in and get Osama bin Laden. Well, then what? Because someone replaces him. And it wasn't Afghans who attacked us on 9/11. It was 17 Saudis, one guy from the UAE, and an Egyptian who held this country hostage on 9/11. So think of what they can do to a village. And if you're not going to do nation building, if you're not going to go into these villages and create schools and clinics and safe spaces for a long term so you can get generational change, I don't know how else to solve that problem. You can't just keep killing or bombing people. It has to be nation building. It has to be that we will educate the children, that, you know, we will help you better your agricultural practices so you can feed your people. Although I have to say, the markets in Afghanistan, the pictures of the markets I see are phenomenal. They put our local farmers' markets to shame. But that had to be a piece of it. That had to be a piece of it was nation building. And that is the one thing that I have disagreed with, that we have not gone in long-term to nation build and make a change.
Joe Biden said in 2002 that we can't be afraid of nation building, and now he says it is a failed enterprise and it is not something for us to do. And that sounds like policy that both Republicans and Democrats at the national level agree with right now. So we'll see going forward. Evelina writes to say, as somebody who came with just two suitcases, thank you. Thank you to everyone who contributes in any way to programs that give entire families opportunity to live their real lives. Just thank you. Thank you for the note, Evelina. And on that note, Ellen, one more time, if people want to be in touch with you, how do they do that?
They can go to our website. It's keepingourpromise.org.
Keepingourpromise.org. Waleed, you told me earlier this hour that right now you are hopeless. Is there anything that you feel could happen that would give you hope?
Yes. If administration in Kabul embassy and also administration here, they change the policy, they change the management system. So, of course, there's possibility that every single person who's qualified and has the documents, they can get to the Kabul airport and can come safely here. Yes. There's still hope, but we have to change the platform and the policy and the the system that right now they are practicing over there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to hear in 4 minutes, at 1 o'clock, Joe Biden, President Biden addresses the country on this, and you're going to hear that live coming up here. Last question is for Najiba. We got about a minute left here. Najiba, when you think about the future of Afghanistan, can you see a future without the Taliban in charge and without another war?
Actually, do based on the assessment for the current situation and what we, feedbacks we are receiving back from the home country and from the friends, everyone is totally hopeless. And even while we are saying that we cannot do anything for all those individuals who have documents even on hand, we cannot save them, and everyone is in thinking to leave the country. So in such situation, how you will keep hope for a warless Afghanistan or for the future improvement? Mm. Nothing.
Wow.
I just wanna add one more point, that the war already started against Taliban over there in Afghanistan. In north of Afghanistan, Panjshir province, but it is not under control of Taliban, and the leaders, the North leaders already announced that they are going to fight against Taliban and they will not be part of the Taliban government. So
yeah, Waleed is correct. They're flying the flag of the Northern Alliance. If you remember the Northern Alliance, and Ahmad Shah Massoud's son, Ahmad Massoud, is part of that. The former vice president of Afghanistan is part of that. It's a question of how much they have in terms of strength and numbers and security. But he's right. About 70 miles north of Kabul, a resistance is already forming, and we will see what happens with that. Waleed, good luck to you. All the love to you. I hope you feel welcome, and I hope everyone who needs to be here can get here. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Najiba, thank you as well.
Thank you. Good luck
to you. Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Ellen Smith, Executive Director of Keeping Our Promise, is going to listen to what President Biden says and give us her thoughts in our next hour. We'll talk to you soon, Ellen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oof, boy, President Biden coming up in about a minute and a half, and you'll hear it right here.